Hey, welcome back to the Lifetime Athlete Podcast. I'm your host, John Zombro. Today, episode number 257. And I'm also psyched to say that I'm here with my great friend, my broach, and co-host PK. Good morning, brother.
Good morning, JC. Glad to be here.
You know, I don't know if I should have had that third cup of coffee this morning that I'm working on.
Three?
I know.
Three of rocket fuel, trace rocket fuels, bro?
Yeah, I think I needed it. And I have to just be totally honest and just be forthright. I stayed up too late last night.
Did you? What were you doing?
Well, I was binging on Dutch oven cooking videos.
John, you savage, you degenerate. What did we learn? What's the biggest takeaway from, what's the key to Dutch oven cooking? Is this at home or out in the wild?
Well, man, there are so many. And I've been a student or an enthusiast of the Dutch oven for, maybe several decades, to be honest. But I've never really mastered the craft. And I know that. And I want to, freely admit that. But it's fall, and one of the great traditions of the fall for me is I get this opportunity to get together with a couple of great friends, really almost extended family is, I guess, the better way of putting that. And we load up some horses and mules and take the wall tent, and we go out in the woods, and we hunt elk, sometimes elk and deer, and we're often successful. But really, the success comes in just the experiences and the memories and the fellowship, among other things, and also the meals. And so, long story short, I got an upgrade on, actually, I don't even think it's that short, but I got an upgrade on, my Dutch oven, because a good friend that I lost last year, my buddy Bob, he bequeathed to me his Dutch oven. And, these things come with great history. So it's a big one. I think, I can't remember whether it's a 12 or 14 quart size, but it's kind of, that has the feed and the dished lid. And, I also got a pot lifter made for it and some other things. And so it was a pretty serious deal. And, I try to keep it seasoned and all these things, but, we're getting close to doing some of that stuff. And I enjoy, contributing and participating in the camp experience. And sometimes that's in many ways, but in cooking as well. And, making a stew or a casserole, or maybe even like some cornbread, it's not very difficult to do in the Dutch oven. But where the art comes in is, if you're baking pies and cobblers, you really have to kind of know how to manage temperature, like, where do you put the coals? Where is the Dutch oven? How you do things, and not end up like burning or undercooking your product. And so there's a guy, there's many, resources these days, as we have with everything, but Cowboy Kent Rollins, he's like the man, cowboy cooking, but Dutch ovens in particular. I think he's down in Oklahoma, he's a prolific content producer. And I watched about a dozen of his videos, and I kept, getting to the next one and like, oh man, I'm getting tired, but nah, my mind is really fresh on this stuff. I want to just reach some level of completion. And therefore I did. And now I'm paying the price, sipping that Joe, but I feel it kicking in, and being with you is going to help me.
Yeah. I mean, paying the price personally, but the greater, fellowship of your, fall adventures are going to just like reap the rewards. Like that is some great stuff. And I have to admit, equally confess that I have watched one or two of Cowboy Kent Rollins cooking videos all on my own, cast iron skillet, how to cook eggs type of deal. So the man is a wealth of knowledge. And well, John, I love that. We'll get you ramped up. No worries. I got you today.
Yeah. And today's topic, I think there's a great relationship to all that stuff we just talked about. Mm-hmm. Today's topic is endurance, and specifically what endurance really is and how to train for it. So then when I think about like all the sports and mm-hmm. athletes that I work with, and I consider myself to be so fortunate to like hang out with you, by the way, PK, love you, man. But also these clients that I get, you know, they keep the lights on at TLA, pay the bills. But it really is a passion project. And I just enjoy so much talking to people, helping them get out of pain and, you know, achieve goals and whatnot. And so endurance, it's really a very interesting topic because I got a couple things to say that it's a capacity. So I consider it one of the five capacities of human performance or athleticism. And that goes along with strength, speed, power, and agility. These things can be presented in any order. And then in many ways, endurance, you know, it's a sport, or at least it's a big element of many sporting applications that folks get into. And so these hunters, you know, I work with a lot of hunters, got a lot of backcountry hunters really all over the country and not world, but I've got a couple of people that are either living in Alaska or up in Alaska right now. So it's really cool because endurance is really important to have in that application. But also, you know, you think about your runners, you think about your cyclists, triathletes, but then all of a sudden, if you expand your thought, when we look at exercise physiology and what we know about so the cellular systems, the neuromuscular systems, if you like a systems-based approach, well, actually endurance starts up maybe after about 7 seconds. Yeah, and I chuckle at that, but it's kind of true in that when you look at pure speed or max velocity, 7 seconds is about the most amount of time that it can be maintained. Like in the case of Usain Bolt, world record in the 100 meters, 9.58. Well, you know, all the analysis of him running shows that, you know, he's actually holding his maximum velocity for, you know, about seven of those 9.58 seconds. So there's some time in acceleration, and then there's a little bit of floating or deceleration that occurs at the end. And it's just a nice example that, you know, wow, once we start going beyond, like, say, those distances at the elite level or just those time durations, we start to utilize other metabolic systems, and ultimately endurance or the support of the aerobic system becomes increasingly important. Now, obviously, at 8 seconds, it's less important than it is at 8 hours or even 8 minutes. But, you know, you kind of get the idea here that, wow, this endurance thing, it's important for a well-developed and functional human. And then we have this almost split where there are the people that are involved in the endurance sports, again, like the cycling, the runners, et cetera. Well, they understand that that's really what they're going after. But then there are a lot of people that think, well, I don't need any endurance because I am a blank, you know, I'm a lifter or team sport player, court field, et cetera. But in reality, they do need some endurance, and it helps them to develop it possibly intelligently, which is, I hope, how our conversation goes today.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, using that science, basically every sport needs endurance. If it's like, if you need it after 7 seconds, roughly. Right. And, well, cool. Well, I'm down. Is there something, is fall the time of year when maybe people are thinking about this? Are your clients talking about it more? How did this, you know, hit your radar today?
Yeah, I think there's three things that come to my mind. You know, first of all, a lot of the endurance events that are available for people to participate in, you know, you'll typically see them throughout the year, depending on the location and climate, but probably more of them happen in the early fall or just autumn than any other time of year. You know, a lot of the, like, if you think about the major marathons and so forth, so on. So it's in fall is a time for endurance potentially. It also, endurance also falls into the seasonality model that I talk about a lot. So folks, if you're interested, you can go to thelifetimeathlete.com and just hit the search bar seasonality, and you'll look at that graphic and model. There's an article there as well that talks about how we go through a year and how I think there are five different parameters that we look at. There's volume and intensity of training. There's our sleep. There's caloric consumption. And there's also percentage of carbohydrates in the diet. Again, maybe I'm missing something, but I think that's most of it. And so interestingly enough, fall is really the time to max out on volume of exercise, if we're being ancestrally consistent, and also to probably start to back off the intensity, which was higher or more present in the summer. Final thing, because I said there were three that I would mention, is that's exactly what I've put into the annual training plan for the Training Tribe, which is our online coaching and training platform. And so the programming that those folks get, you know, it's nationwide, it's year round, it's daily workouts and health and fitness and nutrition information, but it's adjusted so that we divide the year into five periodized blocks, 2 to 3 months each. And we touch on all five capacities, strength, speed, power, agility, and endurance. But each block has a main emphasis on one of those capacities, and fall is the endurance block.
Absolutely. Well, isn't fall also like the cross country time as well? Does it coincide?
Yeah, it's cross country season for high school and college and
yep. You know,
and beyond. And it's just, I don't know, there's just something about the fall that's magical when the, you know, that we're coming up. I guess tomorrow is officially the equinox, the autumnal equinox. Ooh. And that's when the sun passes the basically the line of the celestial equator. And therefore, you know, we get that increasing southern angle and golden autumn hues in the light. That's beautiful, you know, and then we start to, yeah, the nights get cool. The mornings are crisp. You know, the leaves begin to change and the smells, you know, it's wow. It's really cool. But it also kind of coincides with this whole idea of like, okay, well, that you have a cross country season. And interestingly enough, not that we want to make a point that endurance is not just about running, but cross country was really what was biologically or ancestrally we were doing, because the fall was the time of maxing out the gathering and the hunting and the migrating and changing things up. And so all of these things fit together quite well, perhaps even seamlessly.
Yeah. I mean, you know, when I think about it, it's like in the summer, especially if you have a hot one, which we have in our neck of the woods, to do the endurance type training, it would, you know, you planned your day around it, you know, either for the heat or the sun or whatever. In the fall, it's kind of like you can catch them, catch can, you know, that can happen middle of the day, heat of the day, quote unquote. So I think it all lines up. Now's the right time to have this convo, John, and let's just get started with some basics for, you know, for somebody like me. What's a definition? What is endurance? How do you see it? How do you define it?
Sure. Well, right away, we would think that it's cardiorespiratory or aerobic fitness. And I think most people kind of know what that is, but basically it's the ability to deliver and utilize oxygen. So we need to take the oxygen in through our airway, get it into the bloodstream, and then get it to the muscles and use it. And the more oxygen we can process, obviously the more aerobically fit that we are.
Absolutely. But is there more to that though? Because that's kind of, I would say that's the, how I understand it, but is there just like, is there more nuance there?
Yeah. I think there's a couple more layers that we can get into. Next up is muscular fatigue resistance. So some of that actually, you know, relates to the first topic of just, you know, oxygen utilization, but it also looks at some very specific enzymatic things that happen within the muscle fibers themselves. And it's the ability to perform repeated submaximal contractions, you know, over time with no or minimal rest breaks.
Makes sense. Gotcha.
Yeah. So that's, you know, kind of like that. I forget, is it Eveready or Energizer Bunny? But it's the bunny, you know, just keep going.
No free ads, but I think it was Energizer.
Yeah. So, okay. So, you know, mainly the batteries are long lasting, and that's probably a good analogy there. Then if I go into what I often do is these vehicular analogies, because they just make a lot of sense to me.
Yeah.
endurance is also related to economy of movement, or that's a very mechanical thing. And it, when you look at the dealership and you see that sticker on the window of the outrageously priced new vehicle, and it says miles per gallon, you know, that's the economy rating. And so in humans, our endurance, or in other words, how many quote unquote miles per miles we get, miles per gallon we get, is related to how economical we are. You know, a lot of that's with movements. If our technique and form is smooth and not wonky, we basically, you know, sip fuel as opposed to guzzling it.
Gotcha. Totally.
And then maybe a final thing, these things are paired or sistered up, is metabolic efficiency. So I look at efficiency versus economy. So talking about efficiency, it's really horsepower at a given RPM. And so the more efficient you are, back to the metabolically combusting these oxygen and fuel substrates, the more horsepower you get at, let's say, 4,000 RPMs or something along those lines. And so someone who's inefficient burns a lot of fuel to create a small amount of horsepower and poops out fast, thus not having endurance. But someone who's metabolically efficient can put out pretty good outputs using fuel somewhat sparingly. And of course, the fuel, you know, up to the second ventilatory threshold, or let's just say a percentage that's maybe in the low 70s of maximum heart rate, that's going to be fat being used primarily as a fuel. We'll be using a blend of fats and carbs, but it'll be more fat until we go a little bit harder when it becomes more carb.
Absolutely. Okay, makes sense. All right, that's laying it out. It is more layered than we would just think, like, then the, you know, it's the first one, the cardio, right? So let's get in. Where do you want to go to next? How do you think about it once we've established what it is? You know, where do you go in your conversations with clients, and where do you want to go today?
I would probably go to the upside, or I guess the probable, if I, you know, be redundant there, upside of having endurance. And so how I look at it is just not just pure cardio, by any means. That's valuable, yes, but it's a characteristic that makes one hard to kill. And so when I'm talking about hard to kill on the podcast all the time, I'm talking about being robust, resilient, versatile, and durable. And the durable is, it's kind of not just endurance, it's a toughness. And I like to call it all day durability. And that's really a big thing that we develop, you know, with our specialized programs for hunters, you know, like the Fit for the Field online course. Well, if you have all day durability, no matter what you do in the day, you're just less tired and you're able to be more focused. You enjoy things more, you know, you just, you're there, you're in it, as opposed to being a bystander, you know, or, you know, less than optimal participant.
Right. Absolutely.
So then we get into thinking about, well, what are these other upsides? Well, when you are, let's say, a lifter or, a team sport athlete, use those examples before, you can actually do more, or perhaps the optimal amount of training or play or, you know, competition in your sport. If you have some endurance, if you don't have much endurance, you know, your window to be able to access your performance capacity goes down quite a bit. And so, you know, obviously that's, you know, if it's football season, you're talking about the fourth quarter or even the final 2 minutes, or OT, if you're going into overtime, it's like, man, we need people to have some endurance so they can call on their best at that time. And if endurance is crappy, they're either not performing well, or they're on the bench already.
Absolutely. Well, that makes total sense. Both those go hand in hand.
Yeah. And then we get into some of the more, let's say, common or popular things in the lay literature. Endurance training or aerobic fitness has a very strong correlation with overall health.
Yes.
And like now everybody knows that, you know, it's like, you know, you hear we're inundated with that information, have been for decades. There's no denying that. Although, even though we all know this, not everyone does it. And that's an interesting one in and of itself. Won't say any more than that. But then there's also a relatively strong relationship to longevity. You know, so it's always the thing is we know, I mean, I can guarantee with a client, you know, I can make you healthier. I can make you perform better. I can't guarantee I'm going to make you live longer because there's so many other factors that go in, but plausibly.
Well, I mean, there's no guarantees, right? But it's like, if you have endurance, then you're better served to, it's just like the math, and I'm not even a math guy. Let me dig into one thing that you said. It's kind of on that first point there, like more focus. So is there a like sort of a mental connection to endurance, like the obviously we see that physical connection, you know, less tired physically, but being able to focus mentally connected with your physical endurance?
That's completely, you're absolutely right, 100%. So the self, the being, the beast, there really is no separation between mental and physical, and especially when it comes to like this topic of endurance. And so when a person gets fatigued, that's when the demons start coming on, the negative self-talk, you know, and then that actually does change neurotransmitters and hormones and all sorts of things. And so just having endurance in your tank helps you on that raw physical level, but it also reassures you, you know, on various cognitive and emotional levels.
All right, John. So if we talked about the upside, I'm guessing that on the flip side of that coin, there is a downside or something in that area that you want to discuss.
Yeah, there is a potential one. I mean, potentially we could get into some downsides, and it's almost true, you know, as a life truism in many things. You know, if we only have one bucket, you know, we weight that too heavily, we may lose access to some of the other buckets. And so, I mean, you can make any parallels you want, but if a person overemphasizes endurance training, as in maybe only does endurance training, doesn't do any of those other categories, and does it long enough over long periods of time, years, at least potentially decades. Well, yeah. What can happen is, we see an atrophy of the fast twitch muscle fibers and even the parts of the central nervous system, you know, the alpha motor neurons that that power those things. We will see a decline in tissue quality with respect to some of the tissues that, again, require greater loading to be optimally healthy and functional. And in a very extreme example, where, you know, we have this hard to kill lifetime athlete who is strong, fast, agile, and durable, someone who only does this one type of training. So they sort of have high fitness in one area, but they're not really physically fit or totally fit. This is a point of contention sometimes having these discussions with people. They become weak, slow, stiff, and fragile. And it's interesting enough, but yeah, if you do that endurance training only and enough, high volumes of it over long periods of time, you end up biasing slow twitch and seeing a big loss in fast twitch fibers and all the functions that go with it. So that happens. Also, you know, so not only that, do then you become weak and slow, a lot of times you become stiff because you're only using a limited range of motion continuously. Most of the time, that's straight line stuff. You know, it could be on a bike, right. It could be running, but ultimately these people, they are not good movers and certainly not movement smiths that we talk about, you know, owning every position and having mastery of motion in every direction. Instead, they're kind of like time bombs. And so you see this a lot where you know, people say, oh man, they were so fit and they ran every day, but you know, eventually they had a cardiomyopathy or they had some type of orthopedic injury that's like, Wonder why that happened, because they seem to be, you know, and society loves that. We want to reward that and say, oh man, you're such a good person. You know, you must be morally better than everyone else because you do cardio constantly. Ah, I don't know. So, you know, just throwing that out there. And it, and then the last thing is, it's maybe not the last, but it's the last one I would like to mention is when you do all those things, you actually see a decrease in muscle mass for sure. Usually a decrease in organ mass or organ size density, and even bone density to some extent, depends again on what exactly the person's doing. So you become a much smaller version of yourself. This is genetic programming. If you're sending a signal, epigenetics, if you're sending a signal to the body constantly, hey, you know, we need to kind of go slow. So we don't need fast, powerful, agile abilities, you know, slow, steady, long. And also you want to, your body's saying, I got to ballast this weight. I don't need much muscle because I don't need power. But I also, since now I got this crappy smaller engine, I got to make sure that I've got a Prius frame and not like an F-350.
John, I mean, all that makes sense. Too much of a good thing, you know, focusing on the body's an amazing machine where it just adapts it. You signal and it's like, okay, cool. Well, let's shed some weight. Let's downsize these organs. Let's get into this, like, you know, this particular program, this is what you're doing. The efficiency in the adaptation is interesting. Well, all that makes sense, but it does beg the question, how do you do it right then? If there's ways to do it wrong, talk to me about when you're conceiving programs and think working with the tribe, endurance training, if you're doing it right, how you doing it?
Yeah, man, I love it. So generalities versus specifics. And, you know, some people are going to want to say, gosh, you know, I got to be sports specific. I got to do my thing a lot to really, you know, be good at it. And that is entirely true. But when you look at elite athletes in any of these endurance sports, they don't actually just do long, slow, steady types of stuff. You know what they do short, fast, and they do resistance training, and they actually use comprehensive models, and they're truly well-rounded athletes in most all cases. So yeah. Where the recreational folks among us fitness enthusiasts get a little mixed up is sometimes a person will say, well, it's just steady state cardio. That's what I need to do. I need to do a lot of it. And that's the main thing, you know, that I have to focus on for, again, this aerobic fitness and endurance. Well, while that can be true, especially when we're talking about specificity, you can build endurance doing lots of other things that are potentially not so doggone boring. And now, again, there are going to be certain people, personality types and whatnot, that are going to say, man, I love long, slow, steady. It's a moving meditation. It's a catharsis, you know, and that's good. And that's more true for some people than for others, but everyone needs a little bit of mixology in what they're doing. So if we can skillfully include elements of speed training and strength training and that which develops power and agility into our overall training blend or alongside our quote unquote cardio, we're going to actually have better outcomes in the long term. And so if you're really sport specific, you're going to say, okay, I'm going to mostly do that sport. Maybe it's cycling and I'll just do a little bit of these things. And that's probably going to be fine. But then for the rest of us, like people like me, it's like, you know, at this point, I want to be fairly robust and be able to do most of the things I want at a reasonably high level, but I don't care if I'm able to capture that last 10% of potential because I want to be able to do a number of things and just feel good and not get hurt and all that. So that's where I think the artful or intelligent way to balance or make blended training models really becomes money.
Yeah. So talk to me obviously the steady state, right? Makes sense. Mm-hmm. We're talking to cyclists, you're just doing that. But including an element of, I don't know, I'll just pluck one of these, strength. What's an example of that? Like including that in some endurance training? Just like, you know, paint a picture.
Yeah. So every lifetime athlete needs to have strength and work on strength as part of their training. So strength, you know, probably most classically measured as one repetition maximum, or, you know, what's the max force that one can produce. Well, you don't actually have to do a lot of one rep maxes in your training to really work on strength. You know, you can do that with somewhat, heavy-ish loads and low rep ranges quite a bit. And so if we're using strength training, kind of almost like some people will use hyphenated things, like let's call it strength endurance. So strength endurance might look like, oh, let's back that weight down to maybe like a 6 RM. And now let's go RIR1, or in other words, do 5 reps or 1 repetition in reserve with that 6 RM weight. And then that, what that's going to allow us to do is a lot of sets. And so, we're going to get a strength benefit from that. It's actually going to be fairly safe. And then if we do, depending on how we manipulate rest intervals, if we do a goodly volume of sets, suddenly we get a secondary endurance benefit coming out of our strength training, which would be different if you only did, say, 1 rep maxes all the time. You wouldn't get that same stimulus.
Right, right, right. And so just because of the elevation of the heart, right, the heart rate, because and then the rest, the quote unquote rest for the strength training in between is building that endurance. Okay, gotcha.
Yeah. And so this, what's really cool about this, I think, and again, these things are, they're well known and I'm not really inventing anything.
But yeah,
I go out there and in the summer, our local training tribe members work out together a couple times a week. And, been doing this now for a number of years and also in other capacities for many, many years. But, if you want to like shut somebody down and turn them off, say, hey, we're going to do like a very low intensity. So the intensity is not high and that's not an off putter, but we're going to do like a 20-minute continuous aerobic jog. I mean, some people will just totally refuse, say that's total bullshit. I'm not even doing that. You know, other people will start and then they'll just quit, and so it's really interesting. But if you said, or maybe you didn't say a damn thing and you said, okay, now we're training and you put together some circuits and some intervals, mostly low to moderate intensity, although there's even a place for high intensity. But if you're doing that, you maybe gamify something, have a little fun, have some play, have some competition. All of a sudden now they're doing 20 or 30 minutes. They may have a little bit of a roller coaster heart rate response, but the average is going to give them a fairly decent endurance training effect. And again, unless you're super training for one specific sport, this is, I think, better because it's fun. It creates more well-rounded abilities anyway, and possibly less exposure to repetitive overuse injury risk.
Yeah, and I think that if you have only experienced that 20-minute jog, you might just suffer through it. But as soon as, I'm guessing, you get a taste for circuits, intervals, something more fun and engaging, then it's like tough to go back to just especially because you don't need to get the same bennies.
Yeah, especially if you're partying with daddy, so.
Okay, so when you go to Vegas there, did you just have a, did you transport yourself?
No, but like when we're out there, it's like sneak fitness because everybody gets fit without trying to get fit because you're just having fun. And that's really the thing. And the same thing happens in the wintertime. We turn our weekly masterclass meetings into online workouts. And so, what old daddy does, that's me, if you hadn't realized that, I'll take people through like a session and, can do some across screen coaching and whatnot. And all of a sudden it's fun and not always, like a lot of times in the winter, we're moving into our agility block of training. And it's a slightly different focus than the workout, but you can do anything in those means. And the real artistry or art form becomes just manipulating what are the loads, weights, efforts, whatnot, and then what are the rest intervals or work to rest ratios. And I think it is good to bounce around those things and keep in mind that even some of the higher intensity stuff, which is awesome for working on some of those higher end outputs, can have, again, depending on how it's done, have a secondary impact on improving endurance just because we're working on upregulating some of the metabolic and cellular mechanisms of the moving beast.
Yeah, I mean, you're really Trojan horsing your endurance into all your training. And I mean, it's a force multiplier because you're getting two things at once, right? If you set it up properly.
Yeah, and I gave a shout out to a battery company earlier. So now I can talk about, you know, like say fitness. And so when I look at like the Peloton model, I mean, most of us would agree, like, you know, I mean, if you want to give somebody a death sentence, say, hey, why don't you just do indoor steady state cardio and maybe do that with no entertainment. And so, you know, you can, you know, just walk on a treadmill or just pedal a bike. Well, no wonder people, those things gather dust and people never use them. It is torture. But if like in the Peloton model, it's like, okay, well, now we have, you know, some entertainment value. It's interactive. There's, you know, we're using interval based things. There's even some of the programs are on off the bike doing, you know, weightlifting or calisthenics or other exercises. And so I think that's good because it gets a lot of us most of what we need, and it does it in a way that helps us to stay motivated and consistent. And so, you know, I'm all for anything like that. Obviously their model doesn't work for every person and so forth, so on, and neither does mine, but, you know, when you find those fits, it's just pure gold, brother.
Well, yeah. And I think that is it's something that people do,
mm-hmm.
you know, like, exercising, quote unquote, broadly exercising at home. That's the big, like, how do you get people to do it, want to do it, etc. And that, you know, in both of these cases, it's a solve to that. So let's finish up here talking about this. You must have some like killer tactics, some nuggets, some nuggies that we want to deliver the peeps on when you think about this, what helps people. You can take this in any direction you want, but I just want to know like the real, real good stuff.
Oh, I love the nugs. And, you know, I can probably do this as a speed round. I'll try to address a couple things specifically about endurance training, but then also bouncing back to what you were talking about, you know, community, sense of belonging, fellowship. There's a reason why what we have is called the training tribe. And yeah, and it is that because, okay, you know, you're looking forward to whether it's you know, the virtual online version or it's the local stuff, you're going to get together with people that you know and like. They're counting on you to show, you're counting on them. Everybody's probably got a nickname. Daddy's telling jokes, you know, there's magic in that. However, you know, it works. And so the people that might say, oh, you know, training tribe sounds good, but it's not for me because you're always talking about comedy movies and quoting rock and roll. And said, yeah, that's going to happen. That's never going to stop. So if you hate that, obviously, you know, you should be somewhere else. But anyway,
if you hate that, you're not listening to this podcast 40 minutes into it. So, you know, you need to go find another podcast, amigo.
and you know, I have to come back and say, but if you are, thank you. And you're awesome. And we really do appreciate you. And also, you know, we are the choir. We're preaching to ourselves in some ways. And so if we can just include more people and spread these messages, that's really important. So it's important that I say that as well. Now, a couple ideas. We talk about body weight with respect to endurance. Well, a slightly lower body weight. So I'm not saying take it so far that you become emaciated and, you know, possibly unhealthy, but if you actually just one way or another, maybe not necessarily through only the exercise, but through lifestyle and sleep and relationships and nutrition, you get a couple pounds lighter. Well, what will happen is that slightly lower weight significantly decreases the work demand. I mean, try to throw an anvil in the trunk of a Prius and then see how much, you know, more challenging the thing is to accelerate off the line. I don't know if that was the best example or not, but anyway, you know, lighter weight does help just reduce the pure physical work. But then also, if we're doing our training right and we're not necessarily losing much in the way of, or maybe none of our muscle mass, we're going to lose some body fat, a couple percentage points of body fat. If we do, well, guess what? That stuff is no longer sucking up some of the blood supply and creating a demand for oxygen, which it does. It's not the most metabolically expensive tissue, but it has an impact so that the more fat we have on our bodies, it robs some of that, you know, oxygen going to the muscles. So now if we, again, so body weight, a little lower, a little less work, a little less fat, more oxygen going to our muscles.
Gotcha. So you say there's a higher correlate, like you get like losing a little bit of your LBs, you get a significant benefit from that in endurance. Like it's a ratio there is what you're saying.
Yeah. And you make me think, you often make me think, BK, thank you. So there's our genetics, you know, and so some people are going to be genetically predispositioned to have, say, more weight, more muscle, even more adipose tissue. But we want to actually, we probably want to stay in some type of a broad mid-range. In other words, where we've got pretty good amounts of muscle and we've got a relatively modest amount of fat. We want to have some fat, yes. And that's going to differ, again, based on genetics and even and particularly with genders. But getting too lean and emaciated, well, that's not so good because it's got other consequences. But being too heavy, almost like artificially heavy, whether that's through standard American diet and sedentary lifestyle, or it's even possibly someone who is, let's say, on gear or using performance enhancing drugs, anabolic steroids, etc., and they're, you know, so heavily muscled, you know, that's not been shown to be like, it's just, those are outliers on the bell shaped curve. And so, yeah, you want to be relatively muscular, but anyway, enough on that body weight. You know, we just want to get you know, get it reasonable and have the you know, the fat levels be also reasonable. And then when I go to diet, being the next killer tactic that I would talk about, I wouldn't even go in this discussion into like, okay, how do we manipulate, you know, food, nutrition, diet, dining, you know, to optimize health and weight loss, or, you know, body comp optimization. Instead of saying that, let's just talk about how we might look at diet to directly impact endurance. We want to look at it as fueling. I'm like, yeah, I mean, it's like Captain Obvious there, but yeah, we want to actually think about, well, what are we trying to do with our exercise? And then what would be optimal in terms of fueling that workout? And also, is that consistent with, let's say, where we're at with some of these body comp goals, et cetera? So like if it's really low intensity, maybe not too early in the morning aerobic exercise, because I'm a fan of not exercising right away. You know, I've talked about that before as well, but let's just say it's fasted cardio in the morning. And that could take the form of a brisk walk or other things. Yeah. So now we're in a metabolic state where we're going to fuel that with body fat for sure. And that can be a goal, but then there are other times like, okay, well, the duration's longer, so we might want to do some intra-workout fueling or feeding, you know, like a lot of my triathletes been doing, you know, different events. And we're always talking about, well, how many grams of carbs per hour can we put in? Had a couple guys just do a half Ironman and, or 70.3, if you want to use that term, but 1.2 mile swim, 56 bike ride, and then a 13.1 mile run. Your body can't store enough glycogen to, you know, to go that far. And the intensity is too high to do it on fat alone. And so, you know, the convention is, well, let's put in, you know, let's say 50 grams an hour through some product that is easily absorbed, doesn't cause GI sensitivity, et cetera. So, you know, we're always thinking about that. And then also when we think about depletion, we want to have repletion or replenishment. And so, you know, I think there's some things for the endurance athlete that we really want to tinker with levers, you know, to help performance and recovery. And then ultimately, again, it's trying to stay in the performance realm, this whole metabolic flexibility thing. And, you know, that, you know, you could say, well, what really is that? Are we saying we're fat adapted enough that we can quickly access body fat stores or even burn ingested dietary fat for fuel at low intensities of exercise? Doesn't digest or work too well at high intensities. Yeah, we want to be that. And then also, we don't want to be totally carb dependent where we're kind of metabolically downregulated or dysregulated. We can't access fat for fuel. We need carbs all the time. That's not a comfortable place to be either, because you're more prone to bonk and have other issues. But if you're metabolically flexible you know, you can kind of just partition those fuels as they come in. You know, if you're not quite getting enough, you're able to access some body fat and it's not a big deal. But then also when you ingest carbs, you're enzymatically efficient to maximize their contribution. Whereas a person that only eats a high fat diet or super low carb diet all the time, it takes them several weeks to months to get tuned back up to be metabolically flexible when they're, you know, doing that. So yeah, just some thoughts there. And obviously that was sort of high level nuance, but I work with people on that all the time. It's like, man, you know, not only do you want this training to get you your goals, get out of pain, get healthy, crush performances, but you also want to have these things that you do in the kitchen and at the dining room table that, well, we're not leaving anything on the table, so to speak. You know, we're getting everything we can get. And then this last thing I'm going to say, and certainly I appreciate you, PK, for letting me chat as well as our listeners. You jumped on this topic early in the talk because you're that kind of a dude. You're perceptive and brilliant, I want to say. But it's mindset. And that's such a tactic with endurance training, because knowing that you have the endurance gives you some confidence, but then also just, you know, not necessarily faking it till you make it, but just saying, okay, man, you know, I've got mojo in me. I've got mojo, you know, I will do this. It actually works, and you start to get positive and it starts to get reinforced, and then you're not pooping out or panicking, which I've seen both those things happen in many people.
Yeah, I think that's, I love the, just sort of the dovetailing of the mental and the physical in this regard, just how they, you don't have to draw from one from the other to get more, they actually complement. And I think that's great. Anytime that happens, it's the magic.
Hell yes, brother. And like, again, what I'm gonna say, I think that's the key to being a lifetime athletes, you know, we're in this thing trying to go as far as we can, get what we can out of it, but also give and contribute, and being, you know, optimal body, mind, spirit, etc. is really the key. So in closing up, I'd say, hey folks, if you are digging this stuff, thanks. Appreciate you listening. Maybe share it with someone that you think can that this can give them a benefit. That's much appreciated. If you happen to have enough time to give us a rating or a review, it drives the algorithms. Blah, blah, blah. I think I said it drives the algorithms and keeps the lights on here, as I talked about earlier. Maybe you want to check out the Training Tribe and learn a little bit more about it. It's super effective and economical, and you can go to that menu item, Training Tribe, at thelifetimeathlete.com. Or you're already just so totally sold from listening to this, you're like, man, I want to do some coaching with daddy, you know, with Coach Jay-Z, and you know, I want to maybe sign up for a consult or two, or maybe get an ongoing subscription that you can cancel at any time, and there's no hidden fees or surprises. So everything is transparent at thelifetimeathlete.com, and we're all in this together. It's what we're all about. It's what I'm about. So thanks again. Jay-Z signing out.
Adios, everyone.